Hi, my name is Irina Kremень, and I want to welcome you to another episode of the Blue Beauty series, hosted by Jeannie Jarnot, the founder and CEO of Beauty Heroes. In this podcast series, we interview a beauty and wellness brand's founders, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders to talk about the future of beauty and how to build businesses that leave our planet better and bluer. From zero waste packaging to regenerative practices, you will discover why materials matter, how to make philanthropy the foundation of a profitable business model, and which innovative brands are leading the Blue Beauty Revolution. Super excited, will be great presentations. Welcome, Christopher and Jenny.
Hi there. Hi, Christopher.
Good morning. How are you? It's so great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining us from Southern. I'm in Northern California. You're in Southern California.
So. Actually, I'm on the East Coast right now.
Oh, you are? Oh, sorry. I didn't get that.
No, it's okay. We came here quickly, but it's great to see you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk to you this morning. I think this is probably a different conversation than the one you have most often. About the benefits of CBD and how you created Prima. We're going to take a different lens to your company and really your background. And I think you'll have a lot to teach and offer us today. That was the sense that I got from our conversation. Yeah. And I knew this session blew from the beginning because I've looking at your background, I think you bring a really unique perspective to business. And you had the opportunity to really bring your whole life's experience, career, professional experience to Prima and kind of bring all the things that you've learned into this new company. And I thought you could share some of your learnings with us today.
Look, it's an honor, and I think the work that you have been championing around the request and the invitation for brands to think about this and be much more considered is really welcomed. It retailers now more than ever are the regulators, and they have a specific role and function and responsibility to really command a demand from brands be more conscious, to be more considered, to have practices and principles that are built into the DNA of the company. And it can't be just for vanity or a great logo or some nice copy. It really needs to be embedded in all the governance and all of the specific product and company that you're building. So I really appreciate you, again, compliment you for diving in and asking the questions, because now more than ever, brands have such a unique role in society and with the consumer base. They are really they are trusted partners in a world of, sadly, institutional distrust. So brands have a unique role, responsibility, and the possibility of really transforming the future right now.
Totally. I totally agree. You bring a really unique background to your role as, co-founder or founder and CEO. You actually started out as an environmental scientist, or, that's what you studied and that was what you were passionate about. So I think, I grew up in Hawaii and, we felt really connected to the environment in Hawaii. I mean, I think I remember, there was a day not that long ago, really, when there was no such thing as a water bottle. We used to use the water fountain.
Yes.
Yeah. And in Hawaii, we didn't have, it's such a, we're so connected to the environment in Hawaii. We're kind of just always interfacing with it a lot more than I am actually here in Northern California. But you're an environmental scientist. That's what you studied. That was your passion. And then you kind of went into this role in sort of creating consumer products. So I'd love for you to just share your background and the unique sort of viewpoint that you have on that you bring to business and how you sort of see the role of brands. And you sort of touched on it a little bit, but if you can share a little bit more.
Yeah. I've got a very non-linear, not rich with traditional pedigree on the business side, background. It's, you know, you don't find your passion finds you. And at an early age, growing up on the East Coast, specifically in New York and Connecticut, with a family of four boys and a small home, imagine what my mom would say, get outside. Yeah. And so in order to keep her sane and secure, the boys would run and play and explore and really romp in all things nature and the outdoors and the woods. And it was so fortuitous that when we moved up to Connecticut when I was eight, that there was a woodland creek or stream. We called it the river because it seemed big, but it wasn't. And it was this eastern river called the Monongahela River, named after the native tribe that lived in the area. And I fell in love. I spent hours communing, connecting, sitting, cleaning. I mean, I was always at that river and exploring it, understanding it, listening to it. It was just somewhat of an obsession. And it was a place of passion and certainly refuge for me. But I grew in with a ton of reverence for that body of water. And it was a traumatic moment when I was 11, when my father, again, I wrote about this in my book, but my father as a dad and as a person who wanted a beautiful home and a beautiful yard at the time, and this is in the mid 80s, Chemlon showed up with their big truck. And they got out their hose and they sprayed down the front lawn to make it beautiful. And within a day, it was like popping green. And so, yes, pesticides, yes, insecticides, a ton of nitrogen and phosphorus and other essential minerals to get that lawn lush and green. But that runoff within a week's time ran down into the river. And it was a horrific day when I went down to that river and I saw dead fish floating right in front of our house. And it was so traumatic. And so it was a watershed moment for me. And it was, excuse the pun. And it was the commitment that was stirred. And so from that, again, I was 11, that day it was, okay, what am I going to do? How am I going to engage and just do something? And I knew. So I went to environmental science and studies underneath and the beautiful program at the University of California, Santa Barbara. They have the most illustrious, well-known, and the oldest program in the nation that started from the 1969 oil spill. That happened in Santa Barbara. And so it's this multidisciplinary approach that really thinks of it's solution orientation. So evidence-based, solution-based thinking. And it really collided the hardcore science, which I loved, but then really thought about the responsibility of the human. So the study of environmental health is really the beautiful intersection between humans and the environment and nature. The environment is not out there. It's actually in us. We are the environment. We are nature. And so in the role of winning hearts and minds, you need to shift consumer behavior. You need to tell a better story. You need to do it with a level of integrity grounded in the science. And this is what we studied and learned for 4 years. And so I rolled out of there with a sense of passion and purpose and commitment. And my specific role and function was, how do I educate? How do I use my voice? Because if the commodity, the most valuable commodity in brand and in humans is trust, right? And yeah. My father used to always say, work on relationships. It's all about relationships. So he was in sales and retail. Relationships matter. And so if you're going to, with the narrative intelligence, shift the story, you need to do it with a level of trust and credibility. And I love that that work and that opportunity. And also, how do you convince people? And what are the number of ways? You could do it with fear. You could do it with a depth of relationship and connection. But there's so many different ways. But I always wanted to be in tune with the science, because I think the science and the reproducible data is so essential for people to really understand and know. Because ultimately, when people lean in, they're sourcing their trust to you. Like, you're the knowledgeable expert. Just tell me what to do. And that's why. So for over 8 years, I spent my early part of my career in early 2000s working to gather the data out of medicine and academia that was really showcasing how we specifically are vulnerable, and how we as individuals and humans, and what particular groups of humans were vulnerable, children and mothers most vulnerable, and how that was connected to dis-ease or illness or challenges within the body. So asthma, learning disabilities, childhood cancers, behavioral disorders, a ton of learning delays. All of this has its origin into chemical and toxic exposures. And so I really wanted to pull that apart. I wanted to tell that story. Again, as the CEO and executive director of this nonprofit, it was through storytelling. It was working with best in class partners like Whole Foods and Target. It was working with brands that were doing the early stage work in the natural movement. But there was not one place, one source, because at the end of the day, parents would come to me and say, "You've alerted me. You've alarmed me. I'm in a great moment of awakening, but equal parts moment of confusion and paralysis. Just tell me what to buy." And that request, that demand, that opportunity was, oh, there needs to be one place, one master brand, one place of trust. And so it was over nights and weekends that the Honest Company was ideated and built. And it was, what are those core essential products that you're inviting into your home that are sitting on shelves in the consumer landscape that through the research and understanding of science and formulation that were causing harm, that had known carcinogens, that had questionable ingredients, that had chemicals of concern, that had toxicants that had never been tested and studied before. And so, that was our job, was to build something that was safer, that was non-toxic, that was clean. This is early stage clean in early 10, 11, 12. And shifting the narrative and challenging the incumbents at shelf, but shifting the narrative with the consumer base of a new generation that was engaged and activated to make a better choice and direct to consumer coming online. And it was identifying those toxicants, not using those, but also infusing them with plant-based ingredients and staying away from the petrochemical supply chain and doing it in a softer, more gentle way. And so the Honest Company was built over a course of 2.5 years, launched with 17 products. And a lot of that has been discussed and seen and known in the course of its quite successful rollout. And very honored to work with great people in that company and really build something that was a challenger brand. It was there to disrupt. It was there to cause a paradigm awakening for the mass marketplace. Like, hey, big CPG company, you name the name, you have things that are questionable. Right. And even if it's a parts per million, a drop, one single dropper in an Olympic sized pool, or one pancake in a stack of pancakes 4 miles high, even at a parts per million, know that it's a lot in toxicology talks about, oh, the dose makes the poison. Well, you still have the word poison in that equation.
Sure.
No matter how much, we all have a cup of vulnerability, and over time that cup gets full, and then the body is triggered. So the American Cancer Society says that 75 to 80% of all cancers are environmentally triggered. So something happens to you, something you're eating, something you're putting on your skin, something you're breathing, something happens to you in your environment, in your lifestyle, in the things you are bringing in your home, where you're sleeping, that is going to cause disease and cancer. So we have to be more prescriptive and preventative, and we have to take that precautionary approach. So that's how Honest was came about. And then, and sorry, I'll wrap it up here. And then we could talk about Prima. Then understanding the marketplace of pure and safe, but how do we shift the narrative to, if clean is becoming a much more of a mandate within the consumer marketplace, because it is, and still there's a ton of transparency and accountability work that we want to talk about today. But how do we get people to impact their bodies and really embrace the discovery of new body systems and new molecules and phytonutrients that are really getting the body to thrive and reach its highest potential and be optimized and heal and have relief? And there's so much incredible discovery in the world of medicine that is really demonstrating the numerous studies of associative connection between the nutraceutical, cosmeceutical market, and how do you unlock these functional therapeutic botanicals in, again, everyday products, not in pharma, but how do we bridge that gap between wellness and healthcare and do it in a way that is accessible and normalized and destigmatized, certainly. So it's a very nonlinear background, but it's something that, again, I've always led with that service orientation. I'm here to serve. I have information. I can't unknow that information. Now, what am I going to do? And I'm just a person that needs to perpetually be moving forward and feeling like I'm positively doing something in service of others. So,
well, I have that affliction too, so I can really relate.
I know you do.
Know something, I can't unknow it. And so I really want to get into the things that you know that we want other people to know about starting a company and launching it with, sort of these blue, the environment in mind, really, when you're starting from the ground up. And I think the opportunities to do that are really growing. And that's kind of what I want to really focus on today is, you went through what I can only imagine was a massive education, series of trials and errors, learning experiences and growth, actually forging new opportunities through Honest. And then you came to Prima and you had this opportunity to start from a blank slate and build a company again from the ground up. And so I wanted to kind of, start with talking about, like, what did you do, when you came at Prima, you're like, okay, we're gonna launch something totally, new and special. What did you bring, what lessons did you learn at Honest, and what things did you want to do that you weren't able to do for whatever reason, it wasn't available or whatnot, or you learned from experience at Honest that you launched with Prima? Because there's a lot that you're doing with Prima, and I really want to highlight that.
Thank you. I humbly said that I've gotten about 4 or 5 MBAs over the course of that 8-9 years at the Honest company since it launched in 2012. And it is, as a passionate entrepreneur, this is how it felt for me anyway. I felt like we were in a rocket ship and I knew where the windows were and I knew I could see through the window. I knew I couldn't see outside the windows. There was so much commotion and blah. We were in the clouds. But I knew that what I controlled on that chip, right? And so oftentimes you learn by watching others and understanding possibilities and challenges, and then you learn what not to do because you make a misstep. And so in starting fresh with Prima, it's that slow down, hurry up moment, and slowing down and really doing the work on consideration was, okay, I'm going at start and at launch, I'm going to associate with the best doctors and formulation specialists in the space. So all of our products are at Prima are doctor formulated. I'm going to in the sourcing world, I am going to source the best in class ingredients. And in particular, we have a hero ingredient right now that we're, again, unlocking, uplifting, and putting tons of clinical science and research behind, specifically hemp, and hemp being the sober botanical cousin of marijuana. You have, just like you have a Roma tomato and a cherry tomato, but they're all tomatoes. In the world of cannabis, you have marijuana and hemp. Hemp is the sober botanical cousin. You don't have the THC molecule, so there's or minimal amounts, and so, and we further fractionate that out, but you're not going to get high. There's nothing, there's no intoxication impact. So all those other 120 plus cannabinoids in that product, in that plant, those active molecules and compounds, those are the things we are there to harness and preserve gently. You have to be very careful with your extraction technology. So we were leaning into the best in class sourcing and ingredients. And then for us, it was to build, like, yes, we knew we were going to like unapologetic standards, like the stuff on brand and like, again, doing the standards work and clarification of standards and being a best in class leader there and saying, okay, we're going this way and industry come along. We knew we were going to do that. But the operational sophistication that a lot of young entrepreneurs don't really think about. So what are the systems, who you partnered with, where are you sourcing, how are you built, at what systems, what's your ERP, what's your financial backbone and accounting and financial systems and reporting, how are you managing that? Because if you can build that out first, then the growth will come. And state, again, we're in a stigmatized board. A lot of people don't. We speak with federal and state regulatory work. Hemp is legalized, but still there is work as it's connected to cannabis, and people don't understand it. And so there, you know, large marketing platforms like Google and Facebook are still shut off because the FDA hasn't made specific swim lanes between pharmacological and pharma and consumer. And so you've seen a ton of sophomoric and unsophisticates in the business space get in because they see the green rush. Happily and luckily and thankfully, a lot of those folks are just exiting the business right now because of COVID and they just can't hold on, or you've got a wiser, smarter, more curious consumer asking or looking or double clicking on the About Us page and like, who's here? I don't see any faces. Why won't they tell me their backgrounds? Like, all asking those logical, easy questions. I mean, that's the second place I go. I go to someone's homepage and I'm like, who's here? So consumers need to do that, especially in this space, because you are putting things inside people's bodies and on people's bodies that has a therapeutic impact. And so you better make sure. So we wanted to do all that work so we could sustain growth over time and build growth quickly. And we've experienced it, no doubt. And again, retailers.
Can you tell us what you did that you didn't do with Honest, or that you learned, or that you couldn't do with Honest? Are there some things that you were like, oh, I've wanted, yeah, you know, like that
go ahead. Sorry.
No, you learn so much through that. I'm wondering, you know, I think what I really want to get at is like, you know, I feel like you have put so much into Prima to make it a company that's very much for the environment, and that's baked in. And, you know, Honest is really a lot about chemicals and toxicity on the body. Prima had this opportunity to start fresh and bring everything that you learned. So what did you think of when you were setting it up that you didn't do with Honest, or that you learned there?
It was going back to my father's very wise words, relationships matter. Who are your business partners, especially in this space? Because it was so young, it is so young, it is nascent, and you've got a lot on the, for us, we don't do our own, we're not actually in the field, we're not plant touching, so we're not harvesting, but we are working with the farmers that are harvesting, and we're buying the hemp from them. So we've got our own relationships at the field level. And we have the own relationships at the extraction level. We have our own relationships at the batching in and filling level. We own all of our formulas. So that supply chain rigor and work that most people are like, oh, I've got a great idea and we're going to name it, you know, we're going to name a cute name and we're going to have some beautiful little packaging and we're going to dose or we're going to like sprinkle in some nice botanical products and call it a product and put up a website. Not that the Honest Company did that at all, but that's what you're seeing and that's what we're up against. And so there's a flood of indie beauty brands and you're seeing it all the time. And they're coming in and knocking on your door like, I've got a great product, but have they validated it? Have they tested it? Have they done clinical work on it? Do they know efficacy? Can they demonstrate performance? Do they have all the SOPs and standardizations on documentation on the quality side, which is enormously important? And, you know, if the FDA, knock, 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 comes to your door and they said, show me your batching records, show me your documentation, show me your testing, you're talking about your claim substantiation. So have you done regulatory and compliance? All that work, as you know, takes time. It takes a level of sophistication and understanding. And it really takes you building out a team. So we overinvested, like our second hire, first hire, customer experience. Because you're a customer's first brand and you want to have access and conversation. So very capable human there. And then second hire, quality. Can you demonstrate that your product is safe? Forget about can you demonstrate if it works, but can you demonstrate it's not going to hurt anyone first? And I worry in this space, CBD especially, but also across the landscape, of consumer products, goods, and beauty and wellness is you start putting product in a bottle that has water in it. As you know, you've got a ton of mitotoxins and bacterial contamination concerns. So what preservatives have you used? At what level? Do you have an understanding of your QQ? So that's essentially your qualitative formula at the percentage level. Do you understanding where you're getting your raw materials from? Again, that takes a request, a demand, a connection, a relationship with your batching partners. That takes deep, deep specific knowledge and documentation rigor and work. And then it takes like, okay, validate it. So test residual solvents, test glyphosate, test adulterants, test mitotoxins, test heavy metals, test microbiological and bacterial contamination, as we talked about. Test potency, validate it, and now have that documentation on hand. I would challenge and I would encourage and I would hope that the folks sitting on store shelves and many, many retailers have all that documentation ready. So it's rigor. It's again, doing what you can and what you know and saying what you don't know and finding the experts that do know. And then again, understanding that what are the folks on the retail regulator and on an associative brand side that are going to ask for those things and ask for those requests and demands and make sure you're ready for those. And so I have to say, like for us, like the access, because the consumer should have access to all your testing results, specifically how we're doing it is we have a QR code on the side of every one of our bottles. So on our secondary packaging, which is your outer box, scan our QR code, bring any smartphone to it, and open up your camera. It takes you right to the test results. You see the third party associative independent batching and test results. You understand that this is a COA or a certificate of analysis, and you are able to have the public nature and accountable nature there. And then secondly, validate it. So what third party groups are you working with? We're the first in class in this category ever to be certified by the Environmental Working Group. I've known Ken for almost two decades. I had the work on his science team and the rigor that he's brought on the Skin Deep database is tremendous. And so we had to demonstrate, validate, show documentation against that. And he would work with anyone else. So we're, again, very honored. worked, we're a handful of groups that have ever gotten B Corp certification. So we're a publicly certified benefit corp in the state of Delaware. We have to have a charter that's specific to doing something that will impact the world and humanity. And then, and so we've got the B Corp certification. Then we've got other testings like Leaping Bunny and Detox Project and Made Safe. Like, you show the consumer base that you've done the work on purity and safety and potency and testing.
And those are things that you didn't do necessarily. You didn't, but that wasn't all available at Honest. Was Honest a B Corp?
It wasn't available. Honest launched as a B Corp. We were on one of the fastest certified B Corp when B Corp launched. We launched when B Corp was less than 500 brands old. Now they're over, I think they're over almost 4,000 brands. But the challenge with the Honest Company is that, so we launched as, and within 6 months we had B Corp status. B Corp or B Lab, the group that oversees the certification and the, all of the work on documentation and testing, they shifted in 2017 of the requirement, because now at the states level, you saw a public benefit corp. So that class of governance and establishment of your company. So there's S Corp, C Corp, LLC, you know, choose your varietal. They were requiring that their B Corp companies have the B, the public benefit corp certification or your governance. So the Honest Company was going to be required to shift from a C corp to a public benefit corp or a PBC. And the amount of work and the depth, we were too deep into the life cycle of the brand. We had outside investors, the board. It would be a lot of work. And so we opted, and we, the company opted from a legal and just claims and excuse me, not claims, a legal and a risk perspective, not to go that route, but very much the deep DNA of that company is built on the platform of a B Corp certified company.
So I'm curious, since you've gone through this basically like through the, all the rigors of it, you know, for who, you know, I think we're talking to other brands out there. What types of brands do you recommend be a B Corp? Do you think, you know, how much time do you spend? Do you have somebody dedicated to like make, you know, making sure you meet all the qualifications and satisfying the demands of being a B Corp? How big of an effort is that for you? And, you know, it's not for everybody, but what kinds of companies do you recommend being B Corps?
I recommend companies that have, that are starting out. I think you have such a unique opportunity in your early first 2 years that if you want to look at it early, because you're establishing your social human people first mentality, right? So B Corp is built on the triple bottom line philosophy of people, profit, planet, and no associative order, no rank order there. Yes, you need to be a durable company that's profitable, like do things that get your company to transact in a healthy, sustainable way, but you're going to prioritize your people. So yourselves, as well as those who you are serving, so external stakeholders, and you're going to prioritize the planet from a sustainability and resource and impact perspective, that the folks that are establishing themselves early, do it. I would look into it and do it in a, and even if you don't pass, it takes a score of 80 to pass. At least you know the guidepost and the goal orientation around goals that you should establish. So anyone sub 2 years, I highly recommend it. Certainly folks that are looking to activate and excite a consumer base that is much more conscious and influential. So the B Lab certification and that B doesn't have that much consumer awareness. It has enough. It's growing. B Corp is doing an amazing job at promoting it, but it's growing. And it's our job as companies to promote it and talk about it and highlight its excellence. And it's so you're, but those who know really know. And so they'll search the B Corp companies. They will only associate and buy from B Corp associative companies. There are services and there's brands and there's product. And so it's not only like if you had a financial services company, you could be a B Corp. So it's really, it's not only for consumer product companies. So you're a landscape company, you could be a B Corp. So I give them a lot of credit. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering how much time does Prima spend? Like, do you have somebody dedicated to overseeing that the requirement for B Corp for a company?
Right now would be, yeah, so a company our size, we have my co-founder, Laurel Myers, who has done, she was the one early days with me at the Honest Company doing it. She obviously did it here as well. So you have two founders focused on it. You've got head of HR and people. You have the head of quality and product development. So because you've got the product side and you've got the people side, you've got the fair executive and governance and the rigor of taking a company establishment. So I would say we have four people. And when you're going through certification and the analysis and the vetting process, it gets hot for a bit, but it's not, you're not focusing on it day to day, week to week. But right. over to when you're certified for 2 years. For us, we do quarterly check-ins like, okay, here are the goals. Here's what we got. Here's our gap analysis. Here's what we want to get to next time. Here's what we just haven't worked on because we're not that old of a company, but we need to establish that. And then, okay, are we hitting those thresholds of goal orientation? So we've built it into our OGSCM. So that's your planning. And we built that as a block of consideration so that we know how we're tracking over time. And that's a monthly check-in. And then if there are activities to go against it, we put people or resources against it.
Great. That's super helpful. just to sort of get a little bit of a peek on how you approach it. Prima is also 1% for better company, which is different from 1% for the planet, but similar. 1% of top line revenue is being allocated and dedicated towards causes that are in alignment with the environment and, you know, I guess 1% for better. Is, you know, improving, is collection of nonprofits. So I don't think that consumers really understand that, you know, having people having being a 1% for the planet company. 1% of top line revenue is a lot when not all of it's trickling down to the bottom line. It's not 1% of profit. So it's a big difference.
Big difference.
Walk us your decision to be 1% for better and how you view that at Prima?
Well, if you look at the companies, you double click into the who and the why and what are they trying to accomplish? You have to look into the people. And so for us, again, I've been in the world, spent over a decade in the nonprofit space and it's just who I am. The impact and purpose orientation of the humans is really going to dictate how they act in this area. And as we talked about, if brands have a unique established role and function and responsibility and opportunity to shift the dialogue and to be leaders and to be provocateurs and to challenge where we're going as a society and species and all of it, that you need to do something. And it's not only, you can't only do it in your four walls. And so I come from it. Laurel Myers, co-founder and COO at Prima, she spent an early part of her career in the messaging and aggregating platforms to amplify them in an NGO space. Jessica Asoff also early as a 16-year-old created a nonprofit specific to helping teens be activated in chemical and toxic awareness in Marin County. You know Jessica quite well. So we are people that are, it's just required. It's just who we are. It's just built into our DNA. And so that annual, that 1% is, a, as you said, and thank you for clarifying, because not many people think or know or understand it, the depth and the amount of money it is. And so we, if you go back to our mission statement, uplift science and nature to advance health and cultivate collective well-being. So the cultivate collective well-being is, what can we do? How do we have a ripple effect? If people felt better in their bodies, if we're using these cannabinoids and active functional botanicals to get people to feel better, feel grounded, more de-stressed, more centered, clear, they feel better. What are they going to do? What's the possibility? Where are they going to choose to focus their time? Because no longer they're in pain. No longer are they challenged. What are they going to do? And so we love that question. And so for us, and that lovely, lovely, that, again, that ripple and butterfly effect, if that collective well-being is, and well-being is not wellness. Wellness is, we believe that it's more singular and more focused on the physical, whereas well-being is a much more holistic and synergistic belief around the physical, the mental, and the social, which is the three legs of the very, very important stool of total well-being. How am I feeling? What's my body doing? Right? Because you can be healthy. I can eat all the kale salads, and I could not, you know, I could be a vegan for 25 years. But if I'm underneath a tremendous amount of stress, you're done. Your body is going to, 75% to 90% of all disease is rooted in stress. And stress comes out as inflammation. It comes out as system shutdown, hormone imbalance. You have a flush of cortisol. Your immune system drops. Your digestion system drops. It goes into a state of panic. Parasympathetic system gets alerted, and you're in trouble. So this endocannabinoid, the body is there to bring you back balances, to reduce that, and it's to chemically and through a receptor network to align you and to calm you. And so that's why we're so excited. So physical, mental well-being, mindset, and then social. How are you relating with humans? How are you connecting? How are you reaching out? How are you communing with nature? So that's a beautiful thing. And so we can do so much, and then we can't. And so we want to choose giving partners that are activating next generations of people. That it's like, we've, again, nature's a human right. And so we want people to experience nature. So we've associated with Sierra Club and their access and supporting and empowerment of leaders to, especially in the BIPOC and DEI communities, to address the access conversation and the social intersectional environmental ism discussion around how do we act and how do we gain connection and support and health through our bodies, through access to nature. Children Network, Nature Network, Richard Louv is a tremendous thinker and next generational thinking, getting kids outdoors, very hits true to home, and Vitamin N and The Last Child in the Woods and his work around programming around parks and green spaces is and distribution and benefits of nature for children and young adults. And then I'm working right now with Holistic Research Education Foundation that is doing research, understanding cannabinoid science, igniting and starting new studies, because we need to know more. This is a young, again, there's 120 cannabinoids. One is THC, one is CBD. They're the most well-known, but there are hundreds others. What do they do? How do they engage the body? Where are they showing up? At a different concentration, how do they impact? CBN is amazing for sleep. How do we access that? What concentration is potent? What is too much? So it's the dialogue in the research community. And again, the United States government in 2003, the United States government doesn't do any work on molecular or compound patents. Well, they have a patent in 2003 on CBD that's specifically around the claims for antioxidants and neuroprotectants. That's amazing. They don't talk about that. And that was long before hemp was legalized and coming into more consumer acceptance. So there is work that's being done here. The work in Israel with Dr. Raphael Meshulam in the 90s and discovering the ECS and understanding cannabinoids. So we need to do more work in the space. And so for us, the giving side for us is it's an honor. It's a privilege. It's a place for us to get out and support these giving partners. And it's a place for brands, again, to do the work that you can't do, but you want to do more. I mean, at The Honest Company, we worked with Baby to Baby and gave millions and millions and millions of products to low income fence line communities, folks that were just getting their families together and coming out of the poverty level. And so all of that work, it's so feel good. It's great for loyalty. It's great for retention for both your customers and your employees. And it's the work that, again, in a generational shift that I see, I'm a Gen Xer, but the millennials, they require it. Like, if you're going to attract anyone and keep them in your company, if you are not doing something outside of just putting, building great product, then you're not, no one wants to build widgets anymore. People really something that's beyond them. And so I think it's a responsibility for any brand.
One of my favorite quotes is, if philanthropy isn't a part of your business model, you're doing it wrong. But I think that 1% of your top line revenue, it's just such a big commitment. You know, I'm thinking from an indie perspective. I think it's, for a company that's kind of going out and sort of growing at scaling as the way Prima is and has the ability to do that, but it is still a really big commitment. And I think that it's certainly an opportunity to go deeper with your company. And you've gone, I think what's one of the things is sort of a tangent. I don't really have it. We don't have that much time to go into it today, but you mentioned it on our call about some of the content strategy that Prima has had in your magazine, and I spent some time on it, and I just recommend, I think it's really well done, and I think it's a really great way to have a deeper conversation with your customer. But I want to get to one more thing. We're almost out of time, and that's about Prima being climate neutral and being sort of verified as climate neutral. So that is another thing. That's really what I wanted to focus on. All of these are hard things, and they're very inspiring in terms of, all of the work that you've done. And it's so, you obviously have so much passion for everything that you're bringing to Prima. But these are hard things to actually accomplish and to put into action at the scale that you are doing. So I think it's so interesting for people to get a view into, what it takes for Prima to reach that level of being climate neutral and getting certified, and how we can invite other companies to follow in your footsteps.
Yeah, that was a big one for us as well. Again, if you learn and consider developing and growing and gaining greater insights, and look, I think we all have an opportunity to challenge ourselves even more. And action is the antidote for despair. And so if you've misstepped or challenged yourself or fallen and failed, then take some action, do something. And that's how I'm wired and programmed and believe. And so a company, if you misstepped or haven't done it or should do it, you're trying, there's a beautiful, you're achieving that fragile balance between profit and social impact. That's really what you're trying to do. And so every company has that need to address that core purpose and the reason for being and raise issues, right? Again, we've talked about it, or the lack of leadership and dysfunction in Washington requires us to do something and be on the right side and be respectful of your the core reason for being. And so for us, and watching, especially in the last 5 years, I studied environmental sciences in early 90s in Santa Barbara, and the conversation, and when I arrived in class in 92 93, it was a developed conversation. So it's not like, oh my god, what's the science been saying? that the heating up of the earth and the climate crisis is here. And that was 25 years ago, almost 30 years ago. So now more than ever in the last 5 years, we're seeing it. We're seeing it with mass weather events, and it's unfolding in front of our eyes. And so the next decade is incredibly important. And so for us, achieving carbon neutrality with climate project, and not only neutral, but how do we become climate positive? And this is the conversation that you're going to see Prima start to want to lead and provoke now more than ever. Is okay, you can do the work, and the verification is validating that you're measuring and you're reducing and you're offsetting your entire carbon footprint. But for us, okay, so you can do that. And that takes money, and it takes time, and it takes assessment, and it takes a ton of work on your ops, and it takes like transparency and accountability, and where are you going, and why are you going into that trip, and do you need to travel there? So awesome. You don't need to travel anymore. We could do this, which is great. Not always great, but better for the planet anyway. Taking cars off the road, but that's the least impact that we need to have. Business has a huge impact. Where are you sourcing? How are things traveling? You're sourcing componentry from, like for us, we're sourcing a piece of componentry from Minneapolis. How is it? Everything's built in California. How is that getting from Minneapolis to us? Mm-hmm. And are we shipping water? Are we shipping? And what's the concentration of your formulations? Is it 95% water and just a little active? Can you get more concentrated in your product? How are you shipping, and where are your boxes sourced from? All of these little inputs matter. And so for us, we were saying, okay, we're going to offset. We're going to buy that off the carbon exchange through Carbon Fund. And then we're going to do reforestation because we know the carbon sequestration that the work that plants and trees do. So sucking and sequestering carbon. So that's a more positive. So we want to shift the dialogue from climate neutral to climate positive. So you're actually benefiting the earth. So your impact is less impactful. So for us, that even trickles down to, and again, I believe we are the first and only climate neutral company in the cannabinoid and CBD and THC space, cannabis space, packaging sustainability. How are you minimizing, right? And what we are seeing, and it's an amazing, please do the work to understand the truth and the understanding around plastic recycling in this country. Sadly, it was the playbook, same petrochemical chemical playbook that was used around toxic cancer.
Ooh, we lost Christopher. Let's see if he joins. I think he was talking about doing the research about the truth about a lot of different packaging components and plastic
very glass. Complicated business to be blue beauty, right? It is incredibly complicated, and this is the reason why we are doing this webinars, right? We would like to inspire the other companies, but also maybe provide some information or answer some questions, because there are so many ingredients and elements involved. It made me realize it more and more. Yeah, I really like this interview today.
I think Christopher has so much to share, and that so much consciousness went into the creating of Prima. Yes. He just got to share such a small bit with us today.
I know, there's so much knowledge.
But the mechanics of it, there's a lot there, and you can just, you know, get a glimpse that to do things this way takes a lot. It takes some intention, but it's completely possible. And I love what he was talking about in that he wants to be climate positive, and neutral. And that's really what Blue Beauty is all about, is making a positive impact on the environment. And I think Prima is a great example of a company that has work that is working hard to do just that.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you would like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, and leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from the Blue Beauty series and to meet some of the speakers online, join Beauty Influence Network. Thanks again, and I will see you next time.